problem are you really solving?
So in the initial stages, we initially were looking to try and get people to heal better after surgery. And I was diagnosed with eczema and I'm a sufferer of acne. We built this for our practices. We used it with our patients for a long time before we scaled it to the open marketplace. And people around me were taken aback by the fact that I got into it in the first place. It's an odd thing for an orthopedic surgeon to be in.
If your business was a teacher, what class did you hate the most?
You know, founders tell you that they reach burnout very quickly. It's true.
Yeah. What makes it different building a product in Africa versus building it overseas?
We have a very diverse microbiome in Africa specifically.
Sure.
And we have a very diverse population from a genetics point of view. To develop a product here means a lot, right? We are the cradle of humankind, are we not?
Ooh. What's the top tips to keep that one healthy? No tips? Okay.
No.
Okay.
There's a secret sauce there.
Welcome to Built, Not Born, the real stories behind African entrepreneurs. This series is brought to you by Clicks to empower you on your journey of building a business. We know the entrepreneurial path is not a straight line. It's long days, tough calls, sleepless nights, and for many of you, it's been a battle on the front lines. But we're here to remind you, keep building. Your story matters. Our next guest didn't enter entrepreneurship through a typical business route. He entered it through science, purpose, and a problem he knew personally. Dr. Ashley Naidu is a specialist upper limb orthopedic surgeon and the founder of BioRenew Cosmeceuticals, as well as the CEO of NatMed Solutions. His journey began not in a boardroom, but in the world of medicine, where precision, proof, and measurable impact matters. But behind the expertise was a very human challenge, skin. For years, Ashley struggled with sensitive skin and scarring, and like many people, he searched for the solutions, only to find that the most products were either ineffective, unaffordable, or imported. So he made a decision. If the right product didn't exist locally, he would build it. Today, BioRenew is scaling fast, proving that South Africa can produce world-class cosmeceuticals. This is the story about risk, reinvention, and why attitude over aptitude helps you to climb the altitude. Built, not born. Ashley, welcome.
Hi. Glad I'm on.
Listen, I have to tell you, a few years ago, for the first time, I got to witness my own microbiomes when I went to go and see where my menopause is at and what's happening in the gut. Mm. And I have to tell you, it's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. I mean, it's beautiful.
Look, it's a part of life that we've all forgotten, right? It's not something new, but I think it's existed for eons. A lot of medications and medicine and the way we learned as practitioners came from this space. You know, antibiotics came from bacteria too. And I think the reality was we have lost our way in terms of the way we live life with the supposed clear hypothesis. And I think, look, this journey has taught me one thing is to go back to basics. It's where you find the solutions to most problems.
Now, you know, it's quite remarkable the success and how, you know, the business is really taking off. But I bet you, because what happens usually is we look at success and we go, oh, looks so easy, I want to do that too. But behind the scenes is this long journey of trying to perfect, getting it ready and getting it tested. Talk me through that journey and what it was like and what surprised you about this journey.
I think that surprised me was the parts of me that I didn't know existed from a creativity point of view. You know, as a surgeon, that's very far removed from the skin itself. You know, it was something that my colleagues were taken aback by. People around me were taken aback by the fact that I got into it in the first place. It's an odd thing for an orthopedic surgeon to be in. but it came from a good place. And I think from your discussion, I like the word success there, but I still question myself every day as an entrepreneur. Success is not an endpoint. It's a journey. Mm. It's something that you question every day. I wake up every morning the same way, fearful as if it's going to be the last day, you know? and every founder will have those feelings for the lifetime of their product, probably. The messy middle, I like this phrase as well, you know? When does it become not so messy?
Yes.
I don't think running a business is an easy thing to do. I think from a regulatory perspective, as you've raised, there's a lot of challenges in that every country regulates things differently. How we develop things in our country is not a linear path. And a lot of learning has come along the way in this journey. I would say that the more we work into foreign markets with what we're doing, the more we learn and the more we explore other avenues that we can help other people with. You know, we started out from inside out type of development route. We looked at South Africans and challenges in our climate, in our area. And I'm not sure it wasn't raised there also, but I mean, we would have entrepreneurs in the tech space as well. You know, we launched the first to-market cell phone AI skin analyzer that was free off our website, and we did it first in Africa. And we used the data we generated from those scans to understand the concerns of people in different parts of the country. So we knew at the coastline what people of different age groups were suffering from versus those upcountry, and we built our products to try and find the middle. The middle where we could help more people and how we could enter a home affordably. We have a very price-sensitive and we have a very quality-sensitive population to deal with, you know. It doesn't matter about LSMs anymore. You know, the reality, the reality is there is a price point where everyone will feel the pinch of spending on. So to deliver something of quality requires a lot of ingenuity in where to reduce your footprint. And I think when it comes to building a brand, you learn from the no's. You learn from all the negativity. I personally don't focus on the idea of the word success. As a person, I believe there's always room for improvement. There's always going to be room for somebody to do something better. And if you have an ability to get to that point of self-improvement, of brand improvement, of quality improvement, you should never take your foot off that pedal.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, I think that the time that we're moving in is really to have the beginner's mindset and to always embrace change, because when you embrace change, that's where new inventions happen and you actually get to explore passions and get to do things that you love. I mean, like, I'm fascinated to actually listen to you, how you talk about marketing, how that is now a new skill that you've learned. Yeah, I mean, you're a surgeon. And I'm like, seriously, a surgeon talking marketing. Love that. But I mean, like, how expansive this journey must have been for you. But I want to go back to, what problem are you really solving? And how long did you dwell on the problem? Because, you know, once you delve into a problem, you think the problem that you were solving is this. And then the deeper you go, you get surprised by what you learn. What was that journey all about?
So I like to think about things in terms of my patients. I'll bring it back to this because this started in medical practices. It's a very different journey. So as a surgeon operating on a very exposed area of the body in the upper limb, people are very sensitive to scars when they wear sleeveless clothes, for example, men and women. And it was a rising fact that the better your stitching was, the more busy you were as a surgeon. So in the initial stages, we initially were looking to try and get people to heal better after surgery. And we explored as a team of practitioners exactly what would be a good biological route to try and get to something. You know, we didn't have the mindset that we were building a product for sale. We built this for our practices. We used it with our patients for a long time before we scaled it to the open marketplace. And when it came back to why we did it in the first place, the problem was the more we looked at areas of ingredients that you could use to try and be biological, to be applicable to everyone, to look at the different types of skin, the different nationalities that are inside our country, to look at the different appeals from what types of injury. I mean, surgery is an injury in its own mindset, right? And we looked many spaces and we tried many different things before we landed on the skin microbiome. The skin microbiome is growing at a rapid rate in the Northern Hemisphere, but it's something that I can comfortably say is not even taught well enough in our primary medical degrees here. So it's something that I, as a specialist surgeon in the country, can say that I had to go back and re-educate myself at that stage to try and understand the space better. And the deeper we delved into that space is where we found the actives that we wanted for the purpose that we had. And our purpose was tenfold. I can tell you I learned from personal experience, right? I'm sure every male in the audience is going to know this one, right? So if you have a wife that tries many different skincare brands before you find the one that you are happy with, where do those products that you've tried and left go to? Usually your husband's bathroom cabinet.
Yes, that's true.
So I've used many different things over the lifetime. And then I was diagnosed with eczema, and I'm a sufferer of acne myself. And then I realized how it didn't matter what the price tag of the product was. I could break out just as easily using it. So it wasn't so much what I thought, the idea that quality and cost go hand in hand. Not always, right? We live in a time where marketing is a very expensive thing. Packaging is a very expensive thing. And to go down the road of developing a brand that delivered on results, but kept ourselves at a similar price point for such a long time. I mean, I'm happy to say this. We launched in Clicks at the same price point to the end customer. We were at selling it from where we started 5 years ago.
Sure.
Yet we went from a packaging that was very much, I would say, unappealing to the greater audience, being very medical looking, to where we are today. I mean, the journey has been incredible to find efficiencies in the way we do things so that it don't hurt the customer's price point. And we built it, you know, backwards. You know, what would I want to spend if I went to a pharmacy? And then look at the greater population where they wouldn't spend. And a lot of work went into that when it came to deciding, how do we place ourselves out there? How do we get to the customer?
I mean, listening to this is absolutely fascinating. I mean, your why is so profound. It was really just all of the practitioners coming together and how can we solve this problem so that you can have a better experience as a patient. I'm just thinking about, you know, pregnant women, the scarring that sometimes they have to endure and the sensitivities around that. I'm just thinking about, you know, the sensitive skin that I have and I can't just put any product on it and how we trial and test. I can just imagine how that must have been in the background for you. You touched on something that was interesting to me and I would love to learn more. You said that, you know, building a product in Africa is not linear and it comes with its challenges. What did this world expose to you? Because what makes it different in building a product in Africa versus building it overseas?
So we have a very interesting viewpoint on things, right? So the microbiome changes per area you live in, right? The microbiome changes in different regions of the country. It's something that is not the same for everyone, right? And if we look at our data from our AI analysis as well, we learned a lot from that. You know, in the initial stages when we partnered with people from the EU that developed a lot of these AI scanning techniques, our people of color were not being scanned effectively. And that we and our data and our means of getting to people helped them reconfigure so that their AI was working better for everyone. Right? And it was, again, an inside-out type of thing, right? I mean, for us to get to reach all of these populations, we have a very diverse microbiome in Africa specifically,
sure.
And we have a very diverse population from a genetics point of view. You know, some of the most diverse genetics exist here in our country. You'd be surprised if you did a genetic assessment of yourself, how much of areas of genetic coding you have in you that you never thought you did, right?
Wow.
So the basis was to develop a product here means a lot, right? We are the cradle of humankind, are we not, right? So if we go back to basics with this whole thing, if we look at how products are developed in the Northern Hemisphere, their subsets of people that are sampled is based very much on what happens in Europe, or very much what happens in the East when it comes to Korean skincare, for example. It doesn't apply as a one-set mindset to everyone in South Africa, unfortunately. I mean, we could have the best product by virtue of its testing in other environments that would not matter here. And for us, we wanted to reach as many people as possible. You know, male, female is a different market. Adult and child is a different market. We're trying to do something to uninvent this entire thing. Is to say skin is skin.
Yeah, isn't it your biggest organ?
Everybody has it. It is. It's your biggest organ. Everybody has it. So why shouldn't there be something that cuts the middle ground? You know, household spend to get this into the household that can help a variety of conditions, right? And we looked at the skin microbiome as an engine, right? It's not designed to cure or to treat something. But if you can attack the skin microbiome to rebalance it to its basic functioning, you have improved on somebody's immune system, you have improved on somebody's resilience, and yes, you've made a difference to the way they age. So there's a factor there to consider. A healthy microbiome ages better.
Ooh, what's the top tips to keep that one healthy? No tips? Okay.
No.
Okay.
There's a secret sauce there.
He sounds like KFC. But listen, I want to ask you a question. If your business was a teacher, what class did you hate the most and which class did you love the most?
I would say the financial side of things, right? I mean, being a doctor, I can tell you we're terrible at finances. I've got to say this. My people will hate me for that. But I think learning financial acumen on how businesses structure themselves, how our financial structures are in the country, tax implications, import, export, duties, the ability to be able to budget properly, was a skill that took me a while to master. You know, when you're passionate about something, you go all in. You know,
yes,
this is exactly
yes.
it. And sometimes you overspend in certain places, you lose money like nobody's business starting a business. And, you know, it's about trusting yourself, but also sometimes you need to take a step back and expand your pool of people and learn from others, you know. I know you mentioned it a bit earlier that nobody scales alone or nobody builds a business alone. And I would say 100%, right? Any founder would know this, the impact that founding a business has on your family life.
Sure.
The impact that it has on your work, the impact that it has on your social circles, you know. You travel more for the purposes of trying to get what you're doing out. And the reality is you need to learn skills from the people alongside you. You know? I practice something where I learn from every conversation I have. Why didn't this work for somebody? Why wasn't this appealing for somebody? Why did they say no? That gives you more information than an easy yes or an easy sale. Selling to somebody is not the way you learn your business. It's by failing. You have to fail. If everything was easy and we were all on the same playing field, life wouldn't exactly be the same. You know, I do believe that, you know, people have their likes and wants and so on. And sometimes you're not what they like and you're not what they want. But if you can find out why, maybe one day you could be.
I love that. Because in marketing, you always have the people that's buying into you, the positive sentiment. Then that's the undecided and the negative sentiment. You can't really, you can change the negative sentiment if you have an understanding. But the goal is always to figure out the undecided and how you can shift them into wanting to do business with you. And it's so true what you say. It's so important to really have those conversations and human interactions. These are not things that you're going to learn just through AI. Actually speaking to human beings about what is it that you want, you know?
Well, I think, you know, diving into that whole thing as well is, you know, your team. Who do you put around you?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I've got a co-founder in the brand that's a serial entrepreneur. That's a very successful person. Not defined by your primary degree or not defined by your education in terms of your attitude there. But let me just tell you, the amount of business I've learned from that individual was massive, you know. Understanding when a decision was going to be right or wrong was more about reading the person across the table, more than it was reading what they threw at you. And it's something that I've had to learn from other people over time. You know, as a doctor, you think you know the guy sitting on the other side. You know, we people. But the reality is, I had to learn how to read people across a business meeting, you know. We had some great opportunities that came our way, and I thought I was going to dive over the table and say yes and sign something. But my younger self versus my older self, you know, if we go back sort of 6 years, you know, I would have said yes to everything. Today I've become a bit more astute as to when I'm going to say yes. Sometimes I prefer to walk a lot longer than take the easy lift. And I think this is the advice I'd give anybody starting a business. Don't sell yourself short. I'll give you a prime example. Two pharma companies tried to buy us out at some stage. I'm not going to list them. But what I'm going to say is that would have been a great option for us at the time if we wanted to just push something out to market, turn our backs and, you know, make a quick buck on it. But the reality was, if you back yourself, you could build something that has a lifespan in this country. And for us, you know, I take solace in saying that the success is not what you get in the bank account. I look at the people that we employ today. I look at the fact that we're creating jobs. It's something that I never knew I had the potential to do.
Oh, beautiful. I love that. I wanted to ask you, you know, once you, when was that moment when you realized, yo, we are onto something. This is big. And what was the moment after that?
I got to say, I'll take it back to the practice again, right? So, I mean, I operated on a prominent businessman from outside the country, and he had a great experience using the scar cream, which was our first in-market product. And at the time, we weren't in the open market at all. And this was something that we used to give to our patients post-surgery as part of my practice. And the individual used it, and then before he could jump on his flight to go, he wanted to take a whole case of this off because he felt it had a value in his market for it to be reinvented there. And that was the moment in time I realized we have something. You know, we at the time, we were not in open market of sales whatsoever. So we had to double down. We had to learn. I think the next move was going to be, how do we protect this intellectual property? And we went down a road of obviously the legal side of things and learning how IP law works and how patenting works. And I'm happy to say, look, we've been handed a 25-year patent in what we've done here in this country. And it's something that I'm fascinated with, is the fact that, you know, we got backed by where we come from, which is a great thing. And I think we have to go back a step in time to say that, obviously, look, if you're looking at it in terms of success, I'm never the guy to ask that question. but if you look at it in terms of us knowing that it was a business to pursue, I would say that was one of the defining moments. Another perhaps being that we were taken up by a route to market competition and offered an opportunity there. And I've got to say it was a great competition that looked at South African innovation by healthcare professionals backed by a leading business school. And, you know, we got contacted, and I remember quite clearly I was out the country, I was doing something in surgery somewhere else, and I got a phone call to say that, look, you can go forward in this. We would back you 100%, but you've got to resign as a surgeon and so on. And then I had to have a very introspection point. I understand when capital backs you, you have to go all in, right? Obviously, you want a jockey riding your horse all the time. You don't want him riding every second weekend, you know. So I could understand where they were coming from. At the time, it was a very much an introspection point, and I decided at that point in life that, look, I wouldn't walk away from what I do for a living. I think it's an important thing. And it's taken a long time to be successful at that, and to have your contact with your population and so on as a surgeon. But when it came to pushing the brand out, I realized no one would do it. It has to be me. So I wore two hats, and I've been wearing two hats for quite a few years now.
That's a skill.
I don't know if you call it a skill. I'm not sure if it's a smart thing to do, but I couldn't unsee that this was something of value. So I decided to scale people. And that's where I started to build on the relationships I had. And we brought in additional directors. We brought in additional people into the company in terms of employing people and so on. And then it eased the relationship quite a lot. Mm. I got to impart the understanding of the products, the education behind the products and everything to lay people. And then you realize how much this space is opening people's mindsets to.
Yes.
You know, I like to believe that we are a brand that's not influenced. We are recommended. That's the way I like to feel, right?
That's
lovely.
We're not
pushing for somebody to sell us. I want a user to get the next user. You know, we've grown by a personal recommendation. We've grown by word of mouth quite a lot. You know, if you had asked me whether we would be on a leading retailer's shelves 5 years ago, I probably laughed. I didn't think we would have reached this quickly. In my mind, it's a long road, but I do think, you know, if you find that moment that you believe you have something, there's no decision after that point. If you are founder CEO, you are going to push yourself. You're going to eat, sleep, and live your brand until you get it there. And I think that's an important thing for people to know, right? Find that it is going to work. If you're going to fail, fail fast.
Mm.
You know, you allocate a lot of time and resources to this, and you can destroy everything around you trying to make something that's not working live longer.
Yeah,
and I think that's another message. You know, this is not the first pursuit of something in this space. You know, I've had a few side hustles to deal with when it came to trying to expand the brand, and then only for you to realize, look, it's a learning experience. You lose some money doing this, but you know, you've got to get to the point of the best possible product, and then you've got to put everything behind it to back it.
Mm.
But yes, I mean, in terms of your question, I would say defining moments are always to find when is it going to be a business, to find that point. If it is, it is. If it isn't, it isn't. There is no middle ground there.
How do you buy back time?
I don't think you can buy time, but I do think if you build your brand and your business around culture, I think the time will come. I feel like my team have been very supportive, especially of the late hours of surgery. Sometimes I cannot make meetings. You know, I find my family being very supportive to jump in when I need them to. And a lot of has come from building relationships. In that, I've now found time. You know, in the beginning, it was just everything had to go. Everything had to go. It was a point where if you weren't invested all your time in something, I felt we were going to fail. And that wasn't a healthy thing, I can tell you. It's one of the least healthy periods of my life. You know, founders tell you that they reach burnout very quickly. It's true.
Yeah.
I felt it. I was on the brink of burnout many times.
Yeah.
And I would say if there's something to put it down to, if you build a culture inside your company, if you build trust and you see everybody on the same level, people will make the right decisions. People will do the right things for your brand inside there.
Mm.
You know, it's my brand and you work for me. You know, we really don't have this kind of culture in what we're doing here. I do believe that this is a collective. This is not one person's dream. You know, everybody has done something to improve this. It's not. I would not take personally credit for this entire thing. It's not the case.
But then there comes a point where you have to scale, and that's where you learn all new lessons. Talk to me about your experience.
I think the first thing was learning what does scaling mean, right? You know, until I understood that growth was linear and scaling was exponential, right, I wouldn't have known this, right? You know, you sell ones and twos and fives and tens and you think you're doing well until you have to sell a pallet of something to someone. Then the learning started, you know, the efficiencies of trying to work out shipping, boxing, logistics, warehousing, and then to deal with scaling of packaging on a large scale. For us to go from where we were packaging-wise to where we are, I'm going to give credit to where it's due. We joined the Clicks Enterprise Supplier Development last year, and there's a story behind that too.
Okay.
I remember it quite clearly. We applied for enterprise development. We were shortlisted as somebody that had an opportunity here, and there was a chance. And I remember quite clearly, I took a box of products. I ended up at Clicks head office to meet the individual I've been discussing it with that saw value in us. And then I said, I asked for an opportunity to pitch it to the beauty team. And that's what I did. I remember it was a rainy Tuesday morning. I showed up with a box of product, and then I pitched the hell out of that thing. And I would say that, you know, nothing I would take away from this experience would be the joy when I walked out of that room to know that we had got it. And I think if you really are passionate about something, take pride out of something. Right. I mean, I think that's another thing that stands in the mindset of a lot of young people these days is, you know, what will I or what won't I do for my brand? And I'm this kind of person that I would stand on the corner of a street with a board if I had to. I believe that if you know you have something good, how you get it out, there'll be a myriad of ways. But I believe our customers are going to be the greatest driving force for that. It's not going to be some unrealistic marketing. And with scaling, the marketing was everything, right? Our marketing had to change. We pivoted. We did a lot of different styles of marketing. And then we learned, you know, like, sure, we could do the typical thing in the beauty space of attacking influencing more. And, you know, we fell prey to that at some point. You know, we did a lot of influencing at some stage in this, only for us to learn. The South African customer is quite educated today. You know, they don't want to be told by somebody, I use this and it's excellent. And then the next day, somebody else says the same thing for a different brand. And I think the reality of life is personal experiences mean everything. You know? I spend a part of my day every day checking people that have reviewed our products. I learn from that. I especially look for the ones that rate us badly, for their experience for something, or for the logistics of how we got the product to them, or for the experience of using it. And sometimes it comes from a point where perhaps we didn't educate the customer well enough on how to use it. You know? And this is how you take these experiences to learn from. And I think the Clicks entrepreneurship, enterprise and supplier development route, I mean, we've been in it now for the past 12 months. You know, it's exactly 12 months ago that I was there on that Tuesday morning for us to.
Sure,
right?
12 months ago.
It's just been 12 months, right? What? And I would tell you that, you know, I learned so much. You know, I went there thinking I had the bee's knees in packaging, right? I had the bee's knees in it being, you know, a very medical looking thing because it came from something medical. Only for me to learn that I needed to soften it to get the appeal to a woman in the household.
I must say, I love
this.
More
than a man in a household. Because the reality is, and this is the reality of most things in the household.
Yeah.
If you target the woman in a household, you'll target the entire household.
Yeah.
I believe the same because I've used lots of products because my wife told me it was the best. And I've learned that it's how your children are raised. It's how your entire family develops into what they like and they don't like, right? I think females are very much in the public eye when it comes to these things. You know, the reality is the male mindset on skincare is adapting these days. I know it's changing quite fast, right? The male dynamic on what appeals to men in skincare these days. You know, before it used to be just a fragrance thing that just gets you a bit moisturized and you're happy with that. Not quite, right? Actives are making their way into men's skincare as much as it was in women's skincare. So finding that middle point came from that point in us. And I would say again, like if you want to scale something, you're going to have to learn how to do it effectively, efficiently, and cost-effectively. I think the reality for us was getting to the right suppliers for what we needed as a brand and as a company wouldn't have come without relationships that we developed in the last 12 months.
But I want to go back to the Clicks program. What's fascinating is that it took so, you would think like, okay, love the product, off we go. So clearly there was a big learning journey that the messy middle that had to happen and improving until it goes to market.
100%. So even though we had started with our supplier development 12 months ago, we actually launched a month ago on ClickShelves. So what? It was 11 months of work. And in that work, it came from trying to find the right wording, trying to find the best appeal, trying to educate the customer on facings on a shelf. You know, if you look at the way we approach this entire thing, right? So if you really look at it, you've got where does it help you, how to use it, what are the hero ingredients, all facing you in one glance. Right? And I think it was about, if you have 30 seconds to get to someone for them to know exactly what it is, this is the way to do it. There's a thing in marketing that I learned along the way in this year as well. You need to touch someone 8 times before they buy your product.
That's true.
Right? They're going to hear it, they're going to smell it, they're going to feel it, they're going to have to hear about it from their friends, they're going to have to see it again, and then maybe you'll get a sale, you know? So the realities of it is learning that process of how it appeals was something we had to go through with, obviously, a lot of help came from the Clicks team. They had suppliers for different things, and they had designers and so on that we could work with outside of Clicks, obviously. And over the period, it was a lot of revisions, reiterations, trial and error. We adapted some of our supply chain, so we got better ingredients for certain things, upgraded certain things. And then we looked at what is the best way to get this across in an appealing manner, but not hurt the customer for this journey. And I mean, we've somehow managed this to get it through that despite us having an upgrade in packaging, the end customer didn't pay for it. It was something that, and I was quite passionate about the idea that I don't want to break 500 Rand for our most expensive item. Considering that in the skincare market, if you look at products that came from dermatologists and surgeons and went through the amount of scientific rigor that we did to get to this, it's unheard of to do something like that. Especially in our local market, if you're looking at it, I mean, it's a bulk product that you get for that price also. You know, it's our largest one. It's our enriched cream 400 ml tub that gets you to that value. So it just tells you that it is possible, you know, with the right backing, with the right support, it's possible. I think if it wasn't for us joining a supply chain or enterprise development route, it would have been very difficult to get those efficiencies right.
I'm just listening to you, and all I can tell you throughout the entire interview is, like, I will not be deterred. I am determined. Like, you are determined, and you know exactly what you want, and moving towards that. So, kudos to you. I've learned so much from you, and I'm sure that our audience is also going to learn tremendously from this episode. I want to close off and ask you one question. Where do you think the future of medical research is going for Africa? Do you think that we are making progress, or do you think that there's a lot of work to do, and how can that shift and enable even better advancements in the future?
I think South Africa is a very bright nation when it comes to medical research. I think a lot of fascinating things in the medical space came from us, and I think our prowess in the medical sector in the world is still well respected. If we looked at it in the sphere of what we're discussing today, the microbiome itself, I can tell you, there's lots of clinicians that are teeming with ideas to try and expand into this space to help different areas of microbiome disturbance. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out. Nobody has created a great repository of testing the microbiome on African soil. And I'm waiting for the day that we have representative sampling at an affordable rate so that we can get this done. I do believe that there's a lot we can learn from us, and we've got to study us to fix the problems we have.
100%. I couldn't agree with you more. Well, that is a wrap. Thank you so much for joining us, and I hope that you have learned so much. Remember, built, not born. Bye-bye now.